Welcome to this week's edition of Dugout Dish Podcast. I'm Andy Kirikides, joined with my wonderful co-host, Keith Glasser. Keith, how are we doing?
Great. How are you?
Still cold up in Rochester. Is that why we're rocking the...
It got a little chilly. It was 74 earlier in the week. Today was like 43. You know, that dip in temperature, you know, it's not as tough as I used to be when I was younger when it comes to weather.
Fair enough. So this week, you know, we're 3 weeks going on 4 weeks into the college baseball season. I think it's time to take a few minutes to talk about some of the things we've been seeing. I know we both watch a lot of college baseball. I attended one in person recently. Some interesting takeaways early on in the season. And then at the back end of this, just to make sure you stay listening, we're going to tackle what was quite a heated debate on Twitter. And tried to provide a little bit of context to the whole coaches calling pitches thing that seems to be so controversial these days. And I think we got a lot to say based on what we know, what other coaches have told us. Maybe that kind of level sets some things with some people, could be informational. So stick around to the end if you want to hear some good stuff about pitch calling. So where do you want to start with this whole college baseball piece, Coach? What do you want to start with?
I think we should start with some of these midweek scores. And even, I mean, you're going to get some boat race games in the start of the year on the weekends with people going south and playing some tougher teams. But, I mean, there's been some absurd scores from a midweek standpoint. I mean, I think yesterday there was like six ACC games, three of them. At least one team scored 19 runs. I think UVA and GW played like 26 to 13 or something. Like, what are we doing? What is happening? I don't know if this is recency bias or what, but the scores I feel like are, there's a lot of high scoring games. And I think people can hit, but I also think it's a combination of, you know, a decent amount of people being able to hit, but I don't necessarily know if pitching numbers are that great from a strike throwing standpoint and things of that nature, which generally lead to these high scores.
Yeah, I think there's some pitching issues going on right now. I don't think that the funny thing is that usually pitching is ahead of hitting early on in the season.
Mm-hmm.
But we've seen it. We scour box scores. I know we were breaking down some of the data the other day, but there's a massive increase. And I don't say that lightly, but for this time of year compared to last year and previous years, there's been a significant jump in walks and hit by pitches to the point where some of these whips that some of these teams have right now are just absolutely atrocious. I mean, you're talking... Would you look at the other day? It was like
20% of college baseball is above a two.
Is above a two whip. And for those of you who are listening, it basically means that every single inning, this guy gets on first and second base, which is just wild when you're talking about trying to prevent runs in a sport that's run prevention based. There's definitely some of that. I mean, we were looking at, what is it, Youngstown, Ohio box score the other day. They walked 17 guys. When you're giving
it
up,
it's also important to note that it is important to note that the whip does not technically calculate your hit by pitches either. So I'm sure there's some more out there that are high.
Yeah.
Higher.
Yeah. But it's wild. I don't know. The question that people ask me is it because everything's metrics driven right now? And I don't know if the answer is that straightforward, but I do think it has something to do with it.
Sure. I mean, I don't think that let's understand that what we're talking about here is we're talking about 3 weeks into the season where there's a lot going on. That said, there is a noticeable increase with this stuff. I think it's too early to kind of sit here and Monday morning quarterback, as they like to say, and pontificate about what could potentially be the reason or what are the reasons for this. But certainly, like, there's a noticeable uptick in walks. There's a noticeable uptick in hit by pitches if you go through, if you do a little bit of a deeper dive on some of this stuff. So, you know, I don't necessarily know if it's fair to sit here and say, like, hey, it's because of everyone's only paying attention to velo and, you know, no one cares about pitch location and blah, 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 blah. And I'm sure there's some truth to that. But I don't necessarily, like, there's going to be a plethora of different reasons as to why a lot of this stuff is out of control. Some people I've talked to think that the strike zone has gotten a little bit tighter this year across the board, which would lead obviously to a couple more walks. The hit by pitch rule, it changed a couple years ago where, you know, as long as you don't move your feet, you're awarded first base. So, you know, as long as you're not kind of hanging out over the plate, if you get nicked and you don't move your feet, like, you're getting first base. I haven't seen all of the hit by pitches, but that's something else. I just think that there's a noticeable uptick in the amount of free bases that are being handed out from a pitching standpoint. And we haven't even gotten to the whether or not we're actually fielding the baseball cleanly. But from walks and hit by pitches that are seemingly a little out of control as to why a lot of these games are getting to be pretty absurd. I mean, Duke boat raced Kennesaw State the other night, 28-2 on Tuesday, and then Kennesaw turned around and won 15-2 last night. Like, that doesn't typically happen in college baseball where you play back to back midweeks and, you know, you get beat by 26 and then win by 17 or whatever. Like, that's absurd. There's definitely something going on, and I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens over the course of the next couple months.
Yeah, it's worth it. I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, we could sit here and hypothesize, and yeah, I do think that there is a layer of a lot of kids are chasing velo, and they get to college, they can't throw enough strikes. They think they throw hard because they throw 91, and now you're in hitting speed, and you're backing yourself into 2-0 counts all the time, and the hitters are better. So, like, there's a lot of pieces of this puzzle. And I don't think you can jump to any conclusions right now, but it is worth watching to see if this trend continues to go in this direction, because and we've talked about this before, like, baseball is a run prevention sport, period. If you can prevent runs, if you can play defense and you can prevent guys from getting on base, you win a lot of games. It's not, yes, there's more to it than that, but simply put, the teams that make it and win conferences and go to the NCAA tournament and end up in Omaha, they're typically the top of their league in fielding percentage and pitching. It's probably the most common denominator between teams that win is that they can play defense and they can prevent people from scoring. So I know ERA is a controversial statistic, but at the end of the day, it really does say, how often are you letting runs across the board because the offense was good, right? Simply put.
Right.
But it's interesting. Like, I would measure to bet that strike throwing overall is an issue and kids are backing themselves into good counts and they're facing better hitters. I think hitters are better. Like, let's make no ifs, ands, or buts about that. I think hitters have gotten better, not just the pitchers are throwing hard, but, you know, we were talking to somebody the other day, like, if you don't throw 95, you don't throw hard.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's intimidated by 92 if you can't edge the ball, if you can't get ahead in the count, if you don't threaten them with another pitch. And I watched that firsthand the other day watching Boston College and William & Mary, that, you know, if you're 89 and 92, like, you can't beat people in a fastball count with a fastball unless it's edged, unless it's down, unless it's located. Like, you touch a little bit too much of that white at 92, like, it better be doing something funky to get bad contact, because the kids are athletic, the kids are strong. It's just a little bit different than it used to be. I think that has something to do with it, but it has been pretty wild to look at some of these scores for sure.
Yeah. I mean, and ERAs are up, which, I mean, you got 60 or 20% of college baseball is also pitching above an 8. as a team.
That's crazy.
I mean, again, I know we're early, but like that's an absurd number of schools, you know, and that's, there's also a very high percentage of schools that are still pitching in the sevens, which, you know, obviously you better be fairly offensive. If you're going to be giving up seven a game, you know, you better be able to score, because if you can't, you're going to lose a lot of games.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, you know, you got 32% of college baseball is pitching above a seven. It's probably a little bit higher because I didn't take into account the 6.99s, but, you know, for math's sake, I won't round up. So yeah. You got 30% pitching above a seven. And if you can't score more than seven, like, you're not going to have a lot of success. So something has to give, right? And again, it's early in the year. Like, you have a lot more people that are throwing that likely aren't going to be throwing. You know, this is kind of where people work themselves out in the first couple of weeks of like, hey, he's going to be a guy who's going to throw high leverage innings for us, or he's going to be a guy who's up big, down big, you know, and that's until you're going to throw in inner squads, and until you can prove that you can get guys out, you know, you're going to have to kind of live with the super high ERA that you see on the stat line, you know, but this is where you guys win and lose jobs, and this is where games are won and lost. And I, you know, these are also the things I think as a coach, you look back and, you know, you can lose some of these games early where you look back and you're like, ah, if I didn't go to this guy, then I bet you, you know, it's a little bit of a different outcome. And there's a, you know, 1, 2, 3 losses all of a sudden, instead of being, you know, around 500, you're 7, 8 games above 500. And it's a little bit of a different feeling. So, you know, I you're going to start to see over the next, you know, 2-3 weeks that, you know, I think ERAs are going to start to get tightened up. Whips are going to start to get tightened up. Scores will probably go down a little bit more. You know, plus the other side is you're going to start getting into ACC, SEC baseball from a conference standpoint. Like, there, you'll start seeing what it's actually going to look like.
Yeah, a lot of those schools, the smallerest conferences, or, you know, we'll stick kind of in the Northeast piece. Like, your numbers come down when you get in conference, because at the end of the day, that's who you're really competing against. Like, going down and playing Arkansas is cool and it's fun, and like, if you can go down there and win a game, that's great, but you're not competing against Arkansas. Like, your chance to play in the NCAA tournament is that you win your conference. Like, that's how you're measured. Like, you're measured by how good you are in your conference, and, you know, usually even out a little bit there. But definitely worth noting the alarming number of runs that have been let up. Lead to some good highlights, though. There's been some mammo home runs that have been hit. You have the kid from Notre Dame, what do you, he's 6 home runs in 5 games or something like that.
He's got like 3 games of 3 home runs or something absurd. He's like, he's played like 6 games. Who do you call it? Hit one, the kid from Florida.
Gagliano.
Hit a ball. I don't know if it got more than 10 feet off the ground and was out of the yard in like what seemed like 3 seconds last night against UCF.
Like, yeah, you got the Burris kid from Georgia Tech, who's a freshman, who's leading the country in home runs. Hit 4 in 1 game.
He's also got a hand cannon from center field. He threw a dude out of the plate last night.
He has no business being in college baseball. But this is what you're going to see. Like, you start also talking about, like, recruiting and like the increased level of competition. Like, 5 years ago, there's zero chance that kid shows up on a college campus.
Yep. They also got shut out by Northeastern last night.
Northeastern's good, man. Wait till they get it rolling. Yeah, Northeastern's good. Yeah. The parity in college baseball continues to stick out. And I think this whole Power 5 thing with college baseball, like, people need to get it out of their lexicon, because it just doesn't apply. You got, like, JMU been playing great, like, Sun Belt. Mm-hmm. Old Dominion continues to win games. Louisiana Tech, rolling, like, really good program. Southern Miss, really good program. You got Northeastern. And I mean, I'm not even
Campbell.
Really into the, yeah, Campbell's rolling. You got Coastal Carolina.
Coastal.
These are non-Power 5 schools that are better than Power 5 schools. And mm-hmm. I just think that this conversation around well, he's not a power five player. Like, it's lazy. Like, no offense to the Big Ten, but the bottom end of the Big Ten is, don't tell me that they're better than the Sun Belt because they're in the Big Ten. Like, that's it's just a lazy way to look at it. And I think it continues to show up.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you ever say no offense. Like,
yeah. I mean, you know how people get all, they get all sensitive to this stuff because it disrupts what they want.
You can't say anything that has a hint of truth to it without offending somebody.
Yeah.
But that's the reality. Like, I mean, Santa Barbara is in the top 25. Irvine's top 25. Campbell, yep. Dallas Baptist, Coastal.
Yeah, good luck with Dallas Baptist.
They're, I mean, some people will consider ECU a non-power five, but I mean, I think from a bit, I don't know, I guess argument's sake they are, but, you know, there's a lot of non-power five, or I don't even know if we can consider them power fives anymore because they're all like one conference. But, you know, from a traditional power five standpoint, there's a ton in baseball that are far better than a lot of some of the bottom end power five conferences. Yep. Like, you know, and that's just reality. Like, this isn't like, go look at the numbers over the last five, six. I mean, Coastal won a World Series 6-7 years ago, whatever that was. They were national champs.
Yep.
When's the last time a Big Ten team won the national championship in baseball? I'll wait.
I'm not sure if anybody has, Keith.
That's why I said I'll wait.
Hey, little known fact, until Virginia won the national championship in 2015, the last ACC team to win a national championship was Wake Forest in 1950.
Yeah.
Pretty wild.
Mm-hmm.
Has an ACC team won it since? They haven't.
I do not believe so.
No, I think Virginia was the last ACC team to win. I think that was
Virginia. I mean, Vandy's in there.
It was 2000.
Ole Miss, Mississippi State, LSU.
Yep.
I'm just rattling off the top of my head.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah. No, we had Virginia, Coastal in 16. Then I'll pull it up. And then Florida, Oregon State, Vandy, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, LSU. So, no.
Yep. Speaking of Ole Miss and Mississippi State, interesting start to the year for those. I think that's another interesting storyline that's worth keeping track of here as the season goes on, is that there's some traditional powers that are legitimately struggling right now. Mm-hmm. And see if they can right the ship, especially when you start talking about, you know, losing midweek games to, you know, what are considered not very good programs, and you're starting to get ready into SEC play. Like, if you're not sharp in SEC play, like, you can run off 9 losses in a row, and like, it's tough. Mm-hmm. Like, it can go south on you really quick when you play at that level. And, you know, those are two programs that, like, I know Mississippi State's won a few games recently, and, you know, I don't think the competition's very good. They haven't beaten anybody that's all that impressive, and they've lost to some teams that normally they probably wouldn't lose to. So it'll be interesting to track. And they're not the only two programs. You know, there's other programs that are struggling a little bit relative to where they usually stand right now, and to see if they can right the ship. And, you know, we see this kind of shuffling in college baseball all the time. But the other one that sticks out to me is Oklahoma State's had some losses that they're not usually accustomed to having, some midweek stuff, some conference stuff. It'll be interesting to see if these programs are able to bounce back, because they've kind of been perennial, you know, either national championship or super regional type programs that are not heading in that direction, you know, a quarter of the way through the season, which is wild to say that we're basically a quarter of the way through the season.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're struggling right now. I think that we'll see what happens when, as the season kind of obviously turns or progresses. But, you know, there's certainly some programs to watch to kind of see what what shakes out there over the course of this entire year. I stand corrected for those of you who are going to fact check us, but I stand corrected. The Big Ten, Andrew, has 3 World Series.
When was that?
The most recent, and it's only by one team, which is the University of Minnesota, was 1964. So 1956, 1960, 1964.
So what you're saying is that it's been a while.
It's been quite some time. Yes. Michigan in 62.
Now they've had some teams get to the College World Series. Right. Yeah, you had absolutely. Indiana team with Schwarber. The Michigan team is national runner up.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two.
Ohio State in 66. So my point is, it's been a while.
It's been a while.
Holy Cross with a national championship, by the way, too. Most people don't know that.
What year was that?
1952.
Okay. Okay. Crusaders ran out a good squad that year.
They did.
Good for them. What else sticks out to you right now? College baseball.
Gosh, I think the one thing that the awesome thing, I think the first couple of weeks, especially with some of the bigger schools, are the amount of kind of like round robin tournaments that they're rolling out there nowadays.
Yeah, big fan.
Where you're getting to see some of the better teams kind of go head to head early on and kind of square off and see where they're at. Which I think I think it's awesome to be able to do. It's obviously baseball is a lot different from football from this standpoint, and I think that it's a little bit more similar to hoops in this regard, that you're not going to get penalized if the number 10 and number you're sixth, and you play the number 10 team in the country and you see what happens in week 2 of the season. And if you lose, it's not going to be the difference between you getting an at-large bid or not. So I think being able to see a lot of those things over the first couple weekends is a pretty cool thing for college baseball, where, I think last week there was, LSU, Vandy, Texas, and Texas State maybe all played in the round robin type thing. Oregon State was in one early on. I think those types of things that were, they're kind of doing at the front end of the college baseball season is a pretty cool thing too. Cause it's, one, it's getting more people out there, and I know, BC, they did it with Ohio State and
Arizona.
Yeah.
And did they play Arizona? No, they did with Ohio State, Kansas State, and Cal.
Kansas State. Yep. So they being able to like that type of stuff where you're kind of seeing some teams that wouldn't generally play against each other for one, and two, you're kind of seeing some of the bigger programs, square all early on to kind of see where they're at. I think that's a pretty cool thing for college baseball, and they're getting into different markets and playing in pro parks and playing in, spring training facilities where, they seat, 10,000 people or whatever. I just think that that's an awesome thing for the game to kind of be able to grow itself, a little bit more organically while being able to see a lot of people and, teams that don't, traditionally play against each other, be able to do that early on.
Yeah. I mean, you get matchups like Arkansas, Oregon State,
mm-hmm.
where Hagan Smith goes pitches against, you get to see one of the best left-handed pitchers in the country face arguably the best offensive player in the country in Travis Bezzana. And we'd be remiss to not talk about how ridiculous of a start that was by Hagan Smith.
Yep.
What was it? 17 punchies in 6 innings. And he threw 78 pitches to do it.
It was something absurd.
Which is the efficiency, the quality of the stuff in the strike zone to do that, to have those kind of strikeout numbers against that lineup, right? There's big leaguers in that lineup. Caraway is a stud. Bazan is probably a top 5 pick this year. Like, you're not talking about some, below average you know, Northeast team just coming out of the gym. Like, you're talking about one of the best teams in the country, and he's just flooding the zone with stuff that guys can't get to. Just a remarkable. It has to be, it might be the best six innings any kid's thrown in college baseball in a really long time. When you take a look at just the overall picture that I just tried to paint there with the quality of the lineup, the number of pitches, the number of strikeouts, like, it's just a, what an absurd outing.
Yeah, it was definitely the opposite of what Nuke LaLoosh would do. And, from his first start when he punched 17 and walked 17 and somehow was still in the game. But nevertheless, it was a different day, different ball game back in the day when Durham Bulls were squaring off against each other. I just think that, like, being able to see some of those things is awesome for, you know, and I know Coastal does some stuff early, you know, I think they played Duke, and maybe it's a Big Ten team, Indiana, maybe, I think that first weekend,
yep,
memory serves, there's someone else in that four-way, forgive me for not remembering who it was, but, you know, another, you know, I think it was Mason, who was in a regional final last year.
Yeah.
You know, so like that, even that, like, that's, you know, it's a pretty cool weekend from an opening weekend standpoint, seeing stuff like that. And Coastal's always done that. Like, we played in that when I was in college. So, you know, it's nothing new.
Yeah. Santa Barbara fruit cross the country to face Campbell.
Yep.
Like, good on them. Go show up in a Campbell's tough place to play, man. Like, they've done an awesome job building out that facility. We played there a bunch when I was at William & Mary, and they really built it up. Like, that's a tough place to play. Flying east is always really hard. And you show up and you play a really good team. Like, good on Santa Barbara. You know, I know we've talked about it. We talked about it last year when we were talking about the NCAA tournament. But some of the West Coast teams have taken a hit from an RPI perspective because, for whatever reason, some of the teams out there haven't been as good as they've traditionally been. Like, good on Santa Barbara for saying, you know what, we're going to go get some really high quality games under our belt to start the year and, you know, try to boost that RPI and give ourselves a chance to get an at-large bid, because I believe they got left out last year. A lot of people were, you know, fairly upset that they did not get in. So
I believe they were as well.
Yeah, so good on them. Like, I think that stuff's cool. Like, you got Northeastern flying out to go play Arizona. Like, that's cool stuff. Watch these teams go down and challenge themselves. Like, you know, Northeastern, they could easily go down to some low-level Division I school down south and just go get your three wins and come home. But they got bigger aspirations for that, and they're testing themselves early in the season against some really good competition, because, you know, when they get into conference and they got to beat Wilmington and they got to beat – Campbell, they got to beat Charleston. Like, you got to be prepared for those types of matchups, and testing yourself early is a good way to sort some of that stuff out.
I concur, Doctor.
Let's talk about this pitch calling thing. So for those of you who didn't follow it, we won't get into the where this all comes from, because that's a whole nother conversation, but you hear people talk about it all the time that, you know, you're kind of on one side of the aisle or the other. You know, the college coaches shouldn't be calling pitches, and they're lazy and they don't want to coach, and, you know, they're control freaks. And, you know, you kind of get that side of the aisle, and then you get some more reasonable folks who kind of understand that when your job's on the line, yeah, you probably a little bit more comfortable taking the responsibility of calling those pitches as opposed to putting it on a 19-year-old. So there's a lot more to this, and I think we both have some talking points that are probably pretty darn valid for people to consider here. And you know, I'll come out and say it: this idea that a college catcher should be calling pitches, if you're going to make me go in one direction or the other, like, no, I don't want my catcher calling pitches. And I got a lot of reasons for it. And we can kind of go through that. But the other side of this conversation is where some of this really stems from, is the youth levels and coaches calling pitches for their 11-year-old like their 11U team. So let's try to unpack this a little bit. Where do you want to start?
Wherever you want to start is fine with me.
All right. Let's hit the college piece first. So here's a couple highlight items that I think are pretty important for people to consider is that are there catchers out there who are capable of calling a good game? Yeah, probably. Are all catchers capable of doing it? No. The one thing that doesn't get talked about enough in this conversation is, does the kid actually want to call the game, and does the pitcher want the catcher calling the game? Like, first and foremost, if you ask most pitchers, they wouldn't want their catcher to call the game. Right? I think if you ask most pitchers, they would rather have the pitching coach who has all the data, who has put in the hours to prepare for that game, calling the game, as opposed to the catcher who, you know what, if he's a seasoned Division I catcher, he's caught 150 games. Like, that's not enough to be really good at calling a game, especially when you take into consideration that in order to effectively call a game, you need to have studied scouting reports. You need to have looked at data. You need to fully understand your pitcher's pitch mix. You need to understand batter's tendencies. You need to understand situations. And there's a lot of information there that the college coaches are using to effectively call a game. And if you can't recognize the amount of effort that coaches put in terms of preparation, then I think you completely lose sight of what this conversation is. And that it's less about the catcher and it's more about the fact that the coach is going to be more prepared to make those decisions.
Yeah. We've all talked about this before, but I'll readily admit now, looking back on it, and I would tell you this as soon as I got done playing. I had a super high IQ for the game, in my personal opinion, but I wasn't good enough to have free rein to call every pitch I want. Now, obviously, for me, I think there's a little bit of a, you can get into a flow and, depending on the team you're playing and what your pitcher's doing and things like that, like, sure, sometimes you can, Eric and I could get into a super easy flow and it was just him and I working together and, we knew what each other was doing. But I also think that there's, I don't know, I didn't have the time as a catcher, and your kids don't have when you're coaching, like, you don't have time to sit down and go over every single tendency of what the hitter is going to be doing over the course of the weekend and how we're going to attack every single guy. Like, they have to go to school. They're going to be at practice. Like, they have to get better at what they're doing. Like, there's only so much time in the day. They're not professional athletes where they can sit down and digest all this stuff and be able to go execute all of this because they do it all the time. A lot of them come from, especially when you're younger, they come up and, there's no real secret. The amount of times that I've had to, and I'm a big proponent, I hated this from a pitch call standpoint. Like, I called pitches when I coached. Like, I hated allowing my freshman catchers to call pitches in the fall, where it would be like fastball strike, whatever, strike one, strike two. And then we elevate a fastball. Like, we call a fastball elevated. Like, why? You just blew two fastballs by this guy. Like, now you're going to throw one that's not even close to being a strike. And it's a high school mindset, right? Like, how many high school kids have you seen or coaches that are like, we're going to elevate a fastball here. Like, and then they throw it over their head. Like, it's a ball out of the hand. It literally does nothing. Like, that kid didn't, if that kid swings at that pitch, he should not be playing baseball. Like, it's just, that's what it is. And you're likely then going to try to throw a slider off of that pitch, which doesn't even look anything like the pitch that you just threw. So, we're not doing anything, from an effective standpoint. And I think that there's so many layers to this game. Like, you get guys that want to call pitches that'll be like, oh, we blow two fastballs by the eight hole guy, and then we want to speed him up by throwing a slider in the zone. Like, why? Throw another fastball. Until you get beat with your best stuff, keep throwing it. And there are some things from a pitch call standpoint that do hold true. hey, when you're in doubt, like throw an inside fastball and let's see what happens. Try to make something happen. Like, sure, like that. But the idea that all college catchers should have the ability to, you know, call their own game and do this stuff, like that's just, it's patently false. And you have all these people that'll jump on Twitter and whatever and hit the boards and be like, well, you know, my catchers did this. Like, yeah, dude, that was years ago. You didn't have all the data that you have now. You don't have the video breakdown. You don't have the hot and cold maps of everything. Like, it's just, it's a completely different game. The amount of time that these kids have to put in to actually be able to execute all that stuff, it's better off having your pitching coach call those things. Now, again, are you going to have conversations with your catcher where it's going to be like, hey, man, 7-8-9, we can attack with fastballs hard in and really get outs there. So if we get jammed up and you guys are flowing, just make sure that we're staying hard in, and then we'll extend off the plate with whatever. You know, yes, you're having those conversations where you can cut them loose there. But to sit there and say, like, they're going to call every single pitch from start to finish and they should know how to do it, like, not going to happen. Guys get the pro ball, and it takes them years to learn how to do that. Not because they haven't done it, like, you're thinking along with the game and trying to do it, but there's so much to it that, like, it takes a lot of time to understand how to do. And to think that a 19-year-old kid can do it, to me, who did it, it's hard to put all your eggs in that basket.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that people bring up, and I see this comment on Twitter, is that, well, coaches are lazy and they don't want to coach their guys. Like, nobody wants to coach anymore. All right. So here's my rebuttal to that. I've never been in a dugout where the pitching coach didn't immediately go to the catcher or the pitcher upon the completion of every single inning to break down certain things, to better understand things. Like, if you're a pitching coach calling pitches and that catcher has something that's of value to you, be like, hey, man, he can't get the ball arm side today, or he can't get there right now. That changes how you call pitches the next inning. The zone, like, hey, he's giving us a ball off, or like, we can get the low strike today, or his zone's up. Like, that type of information is being relayed back and forth, and you're constantly coaching your catchers throughout the course of the game because you need them to give you information that you can't get, right? It's really that simple. So the idea that these coaches aren't coaching their guys, that they're not having scouting report meetings before every game or before every series where you break down, here are the guys that we'll go after. Here are the guys that are not going to beat us this weekend. These are the guys who can run. These are the guys who play the small ball. You know, these are their pressure guys. These are their action guys. Like, to think that coaches aren't doing that is just so naive. And you're not thinking about the whole situation in terms of what coaches do and what goes into pitch calling. Like, you call pitches very different based on every single situation. And the other thing too is, like, do you really want to put that kind of pressure? Does the kid want that kind of pressure on him? Because one thing that comes with calling pitches is accountability. Like, you don't have anybody to blame if you're the one calling pitches and you get rocked. Like, who are you going to blame? You know what I mean? And not all kids want that, right? Coaches will take that responsibility, and you can say whatever you want, but most college kids don't want that responsibility. Tell me what to throw and I'll go execute my pitch. You're actually simplifying things for the players.
That's the other part of it. If I'm trying to win the game, like, I want to make sure that if I know that my kids are not as prepared, like, I'm not saying they're not prepared, right? Like, but they don't know everything it is that they need to know. Like, yeah, as the game goes on, we're working together to execute this plan. But going in, like, to your point, like, there's a lot riding on this. And to entrust everything into 19 to 20-year-old kids without having guidance from outside is lunacy.
Yeah, and the conversation about, like, the coaches don't take feedback from the players, like, that's so false. That's so false. I've watched catchers shake pitching coaches and the pitching coach go, hey, go get it. Like, you know where you're looking at. Like, there's conversations that happen in a game. There's body language. There's communication that happens outside of the dugout that you can tell when a pitcher is dialed into something or a catcher is dialed into something. Like, that's how it works. The other piece that I think gets lost in this conversation is, when a pitching coach is, or when a coach is calling pitches, they can remove bias from the situation, right? And there's a couple things, there's a couple situations that I think this becomes really important, is that kids should be confident, and that confidence gets in the way of intelligent baseball sometimes, where you've got the three hole guy up, or you've got the five hole guy up, and he's a right-handed hitter who doesn't match up well for the dude that you're, for the lefty that's on the mound, right? Guy in scoring position. The guy on deck's a left-handed hitter who struggles against left-handed spin. I guarantee you that left-handed pitcher on the mound isn't going to want to pitch around the guy that is in the batter's box currently. But the right baseball move is to not give in to that guy and take the better matchup, right? Like, those are decisions that happen at the end of games, that happen in big situations, that you can't count on a 19-year-old to get rid of his ego and make the right decision on. It's just that simple. And that bias is huge, because decisions like that win games, they win series. And I don't trust a 19-year-old. I don't trust a 20-year-old, no matter how good they are, no matter how intelligent they are, that they're going to be able to put away their ego and understand the full situation and the gravity of a particular situation. And that type of situation is the one that comes to mind for me.
Yeah, no, we won a game in 21. 21? 21. We walked a right-hander with a left-hander on the bump to load the bases to face a left-hander who's pretty good. You know, luckily I could just say, put him on. I asked the dugout. I was like, we should just walk this guy, right? I looked down the dugout, and like the five kids in the dugout thought I had like 30 heads. Those of you listening, it worked out. The engineers ended up scoring in the top of the 10th or the 11th, and we walked out of that ball match with a win. Split the series, 4 games, 2-2, threw a no-hitter. Ryan Yerby, shout out.
Yerby, good dude. So yeah, for those of you who just blindly go to coaches are lazy and they shouldn't call pitches, what I would say is you probably should take a few minutes and really take a step back and look at all the things that go into it, the responsibility that comes with it, the gravity of the situation, the accountability that's required, the study that is required. Like, hey, if a catcher wants to come and do film study and read through scouting reports every weekend and sit down and put together a pitch calling plan for each starting pitcher, bring it on. I think that would be fantastic. But the reality of it is that most kids don't have that amount of time to do that. You know, they're not Yadi Molina. You know, they're
no,
not
the best to ever do it.
Yeah. You know, like, that's just the amount of time that goes into it. And if catchers want to do that, if you want to show up and you want to break down hitters before every conference weekend and you want to go over charts and you want to put together a pitch calling plan, I would guarantee you there isn't a pitching coach who that wouldn't fire up. Like, that would fire anybody up. But the fact of the matter is that most guys don't do that, or don't have the time to do it, because they're a student and they need to practice and they need to take care of their bodies. So, you know, just, yeah, I mean, I guess it's just the way of the world now, is you just pick a side and you defend it fiercely, whatever information supports your own argument. But I think we put forth some, at least some thoughtful tidbits that people should consider for the
whole pitch calling thing. There's only so much time in the day. And it's easy, you know, I think it's easy as people who have been around it and guys who are older than us can sit here and say this, who, you know, I don't know if they've coached in college or not or whatever. But, it, you know, it's easy to say when you've seen as many games as we have or more, like, and especially at the big, you know, at the professional level, like, that's all you do. Like, these kids haven't seen enough games. They haven't called enough pitches. They haven't been in enough situations to be able to, you know, understand what it is that they have to do. Like, the guy who's 20, the kid who's 20, 19 or 20 years old, who's only seen, you know, less than 1,000 games his entire life. Like, why would we trust somebody like that when there's the pitching coach who's 50 and he's seen, you know, 30,000 games in his life. I'm just ballparking. Like, would you rely on the guy who's done it 30,000 times or the guy who's done it less than 1,000? Like, just pure numbers alone, you're going to be like, ah, the guy who's done it 30,000 times is probably going to be a little bit better than the guy who's done it 500 times. Like, it's just the reality. It doesn't mean that they're not imparting their wisdom and helping those guys, but the reality is, like, when you've done it for that long and you're really good at it, like, you're going to eventually start rubbing off on the catchers, and you're going to start on, like, the kids are going to start thinking along with you and understanding what you're doing. But again, like, from it, like, they haven't been in all the situations it is that you've seen over the years. So you're going to always default back to, like, hey man, I've done this 40,000 times in my life. You've done it 150. Like, when you put it like that, what are we going to say, people? Like, we're going to go, oh, no, the guy, he needs to learn. Like, how do you think the guy who has 40,000 attempts learned?
Yeah. How about the 12U coach for your July 4th fireworks extravaganza? How about you put away your freaking clipboard and let your 12-year-old call pitches? Like, that's where it starts, because there's no consequence there. And I'm sure this will ruffle some feathers, but, like, if you're a 12U, 13U coach and you're calling pitches for your guy, you're the same dude who says that college coaches should, like it's the same people. Like, get out of your own way. If you want to teach your kids, start when they're young.
What pitches are you calling at 12U?
Hey, Keith, man, they got scouting reports. This is a perfect game. Dude, they had a 6U coach pitch perfect game tournament in Texas this past weekend. No, that's what's happening.
What are we doing?
It's freaking absurd. Yeah.
We digress here for a second. They had a 6U.
6U coach pitch. Coach pitch.
How much do you have to pay for that?
I don't know, but
probably way too much.
If you're leaving,
think about it. Like, think about that though. Like, what a racket you have to pay to then do the work. Like, what an idea. Gosh.
Cash. It's good. It's just as good as money.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, we are digressing, but this is why long form podcasting is fun. If you're 6U or 7U or even 8U and you're leaving your town and traveling hours to go play tournaments, I think you lost sight of what's important. I hate to say it, but, like, you want to take them for a fun trip to Cooperstown or something like that, but, like, let's get real. Like, you don't need to be flying down to Texas for your 6U or even driving outside of your town for your 6U coach pitch team.
They're six. Like,
is the catcher calling pitches for the coach? That's what I want to know.
But, like, even if they're 10 or 11 or 12, like, what are we doing?
If you want to educate kids on that kind of stuff, do it when they're 10, 11, 12.
Oh, my God.
Take the time to do it with them in high school. Give kids responsibilities. Talk them through why certain stuff matters. But college is a different level. Especially when you get to the highest levels of it, where losing means you lose your job. You cannot lose sight of that. Coaches are not selfish. They're not lazy.
They might be selfish.
Well, okay. They're not calling pitches for selfish reasons, I should say. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, there you go.
Right? And they're not doing it because they're lazy and they don't want to coach their players. Like, that's not how this works.
And if they aren't, like, if they are, like, those guys usually don't last.
Yeah,
they probably won't be around for that long.
Yeah, exactly. So, and honestly, with the new pitch clock, dude, the pace of games is fantastic.
Amazing.
Love it. Love every second of it. And I know people are like, wearing those stupid Apple Watches. No, this is awesome. This is.
Yeah, you can pull your full scouting report up on that thing.
It's fantastic.
Like, your 6-4-3 charts and your scouting report all upload into that thing. Plus pitch calling, but, like, everyone knows what's going on. And you can call offensive signs off of it. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, it's great. I love it. The pace of the game, when I was at BC William & Mary, like, the pace of the game in between innings, like, it makes it really fun to watch. It's fantastic.
That's why I mean, that's why I went to the wristband. Most people probably wouldn't like to hear that. I went to the wristband offensively in 2015. I remember, I'll never forget this. Tyler Listing was on first. Shane Matthews was in the box. I put nothing on. One thought it was a steal. The other one thought it was a hit and run, like with physical touch signs. And I was like,
I can't do this anymore.
I'm just going to put a bunch of numbers on there and I'm just going to shout out three numbers. No one can screw this up.
Yeah.
And we didn't miss any signs after that. So, but it's cleaner. It's quicker. But the positive is you can control the pace the same way that you would if you're giving signs. You know, I would just stand in the third base box and do this like I'm pretending to try to find a new sign. Yes, yeah. They can.
It's great. It's great. I love the tempo, the pace is fantastic.
With the peanut gallery over here.
Yeah, well, yeah. At least she's not making popcorn today. You have been called out, Mrs. Glasser.
Love you. No one can see you on the podcast. I said, that's not true.
Yeah. See your handsome face all day.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I think we covered that. I'm looking forward to getting Grasse back on and we can have another little college baseball roundtable. But
hell yeah.
Couple weeks. Learn a little something. Hopefully we get some more strikes thrown. We'll see how it goes. Anything else you want to add today, Keith?
No, that's it. I'm good.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Talk to you soon. Thank you for listening this week. If you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and smash that like button for us. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at EMD Baseball. If you want to find out what me and Keith do to help families and players navigate the recruiting process, go ahead and check us out on emdbaseball.com. Take a few minutes to check out our new online academy. I promise you'll get some good information out of that. Thanks again for listening. Check in with you next week.